Today, we're exploring women's beliefs and how they're expressed in the body. From consecrated virginity, as we heard first, and now to nude life modelling. Annie Bunpresser is a visual artist whose style is vibrant and confident. But in childhood, she found her world narrow and isolating. To find out what happened, producer Mariam Shahab visited Annie at her home.
Yeah, so Mum would always sew clothes for us, and she would make some money on the side by sewing as a machinist art worker for not a lot of money. She used to make the dresses that we wore to the Kingdom Hall. She would always dress my sister and I up as twins.
Were you twins?
No. She'd make dresses from Flower Girl bridesmaid patterns. We looked like giant cakes, giant decorated iced cakes. So I use a lot of textiles in my work because they kind of remind me of my suffocating upbringing, but also, you know, my mother's love. And without my mother's love, I wouldn't be who I am today. So my work now is about reinterpreting those matriarchal traditions and asserting my own identity, my self-determined identity. When I was growing up, like, I used to be so embarrassed of my mum because she would wear like really bright colours, really bright makeup. But then I've turned into her. You know, she was pretty fabulous. Mum and Dad fled communist Laos and they came to Australia in late 70s, early 80s. Mum and Dad were Buddhists, but when they came to Australia, a relative referred the Jehovah's Witnesses to my mother, and that's when she started studying the Bible, and she later converted, and then my father studied for many years and converted.
What was comforting to them about that particular faith tradition?
My mum was the only person from her family in Australia, she was very lonely. And, you know, she had these lovely people coming to her door, being her friends, inviting them to be part of their group, teaching her English, showing concern for her and her children. She was basically love-bombed into an instant family.
How deep into the religion was your family? Like, were you attending Kingdom Hall often or reading the Bible often?
Being a Jehovah's Witness is a very high commitment faith. It is 24/7. So we would go to the Kingdom Hall meetings at least four times a week. We would go preaching door to door every weekend, and every spare moment we had would be talking informally to people that we encountered in the big bad world. We would read the Bible daily. We would pray constantly, pray before every meal, pray before we go to bed, pray before we took a long journey in the car. It entangled every single aspect of my life. So the people I loved, the choices I made in terms of career and education, the words that came out of my mouth, my health, my own health care, everything. It was definitely not a normal childhood, but it was what I thought was normal. I thought it was normal to feel sad and scared and lonely. It's a very insular environment to grow up in. So it's like a world within another world. And the people in this world are good, the people outside of this world are bad. So it was a very fearful way of growing up, being afraid of everything. Right was wrong. Things that are good for you are actually bad and sinful. I remember reading Matilda for the first time by Roald Dahl, and I just loved that book because I could relate to her growing up in an abusive environment and just using her own inner strength to overcome that. And I remember relating this positive experience to an older woman in my church group. Jehovah's Witnesses call it a Kingdom Hall, by the way, but I say church because it's quicker to say. So a lady from the Kingdom Hall, when I told her about how beautiful this book was to me, she basically gave me a lecture on how I was actually worshipping the devil by reading this book because it had supernatural themes. It's a good example of things that were fun and good and happy were bad.
So how did you leave, and when did you leave?
There were a few nails in the coffin before I officially left. There were many things, so whenever I had a doubt, because this was the only world I knew, I had to suppress it to make everything else make sense. So that's over a period of many, many, many years. But basically in my life, it was just falling apart and I was losing all control. I had very little control over it to begin with. I went to university, which is discouraged by the religion. Pursuing higher education is discouraged. When I went to university, it just opened my mind up to different opinions, different people. Then my parents got sick, so my dad had kidney failure 3 times. And then he had a stroke, and then mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I was looking after my parents and I didn't have the right support that we needed from people in the religion. So when mum was sick, people would come over and say, oh, you should read your Bible more, or you should pray more. Or I'll see you next week at the meetings, when mum was going to have surgery on to remove her breast lump. My sister, who I'm so close to, fell in love with someone outside of the religion, and she wasn't baptized, so she didn't have the same consequences for that action that I did. So one day my sister and her partner was in the kitchen and she just asked him, darling, can you pass me the salt? And he said, sure, here, my love. Something really simple and sweet as that. And I just thought, why is this wrong? Why is loving someone who's not the same religion as you wrong? So that was another thing. The final moment for me when I woke up was when I saw a picture of this guy I liked with another girl that looked like me, standing in front of a Christmas tree and holding hands. And I just, it like something snapped in my soul and I just broke down and cried and I wanted to die. And I remember my mum cradling me in her arms. I was just sobbing, like I felt duped, I felt robbed. And I just thought, I've wasted my entire life. Like, what? I didn't want to look back on my life and be 100 years old and wonder, what is it like to be kissed or to walk down the street holding hands with someone you love, you know? And then, sorry, it's really upsetting.
Okay, take your time.
I knew that because I didn't want to be a Jehovah's Witness anymore, I knew because I was baptized that the consequences would be that if I had openly said to someone that I don't want to do this anymore, then I would be disfellowshipped. So that means being excommunicated, being announced on the platform at the congregation, so-and-so is no longer one of Jehovah's Witnesses. That means that the people that I grew up with, that were my so-called friends, would no longer be able to speak to me, and my parents wouldn't be able to speak to me, even though we were living in the same house. So there's this thing called fading out that people do, where they, you know, slowly stop coming and they just disappear into nothingness, you know. But that was really hard because I was looking after mum and dad. I needed to be there for them. So I was going to the Kingdom Hall, I was dragging my feet, literally dragging my feet. And I would sit there in tears, crying, and no one asked, why are you crying? So I had sacrificed so much of my life for these people who really don't care about me, not really. And so I finally told my mum, Mum, I can't do this anymore. And at first she was really worried about what people in the religion would think of her. But eventually she said to me, Annie, you're my daughter. I love you so much. I would never abandon you. So Mum installed a camera at the front door of our home. This was when I was 29, 30 years old. I was a grown woman. So whenever the witnesses came to the door, she would tell me, you need to go hide in your room. So yeah, I'd be hiding in my closet. And if I did encounter them, you know, I would say I was busy looking after Mum, because it was true. But then I found myself a good job, and then I moved out of home to live with my sister and her partner, and that was how I got out. And eventually Mum did get out, which was a positive experience. It was really bittersweet because she left when she was about 60, and She passed away when she was 62, but those 2 years of her life were so precious because she was able to be in charge of the choices she made in regards to her healthcare and her cancer treatment. So she accepted blood transfusions, which is forbidden in the religion.
Does that mean that you and your mum were excommunicated or disfellowshipped?
No, not officially, not that I know of. When mum passed away, it was actually really hard, like thinking, who's going to help us say goodbye to mum and, you know, with funeral arrangements? So my brother-in-law was the civil celebrant. My brother-in-law's friend has a doctorate in music. He offered to play piano at my mother's service. So he played Joe Cocker's You Are So Beautiful, and that was a song that mum would always sing to me when I was sad. So at the end of her service, we played a recording of her singing a traditional Lao song about the frangipani flower, which is the national flower of Lao. And, you know, in it she makes mistakes and she's just trying to teach my sister how to sing the song, and at the end she says, "That's it, finished." At the end of that recording, the curtains closed and it was just, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. And my mum would have loved that. She would have loved everyone feeling so guilty and crying about her.
She seems like an amazing woman.
She was.
Tell me about the opportunities, you know, the moments where you did things for the first time and how it made you feel.
Okay. So since I've left, it's been like this really amazing book of firsts. So I remember having my first kiss and having sex for the first time at the same time when I was 31. I laugh when I think about it. So everything that's good and bad in life is an experience to me, because I honestly, I lived like a zombie. I wasn't, you know, present to life. So having my first pap smear or having my first kiss, having sex for the first time, just all those things like that people take for granted.
Annie, how did these experiences affect your art making?
What I've noticed with my artwork is that pre my Jehovah's Witness identity, it was very contained within the domestic environment. Post Jehovah's Witness, I've been exploring the outdoors, the garden, the paradise. So Jehovah's Witnesses, they believe that one day God is going to destroy bad people at Armageddon, and those who survive, if they're worthy, they will enjoy life in a paradise on earth. So in my art, I've been basically shifting representations of paradise into the present, and that's based on, you know, my interaction with mindfulness and being in the present. So I'm having a show at Bankstown Art Centre. It's called You Are With Me in Paradise. So that plays on the scripture where Jesus is being executed and he says to the criminals beside him, "Truly I tell you today, you will be with me in paradise." So I'm changing it to "You are with me in paradise," thinking of my mother and processing her loss. And the show's about salvaging meaning from the remains of trauma and grief. So my work shifts that future focus into the present and how it can be positive and meaningful and more in touch with reality. So finding a middle ground between dystopia and utopia, you know, between Armageddon and paradise. There's the present paradise of reality.
Annie, not only do you make art, you've been the subject of or the focus of other people's artwork, thanks to your work as a life model. Could you first of all tell me what is life modeling?
Yes, life modeling, it's basically taking your clothes off while people draw you for short or long poses.
And was that an act of defiance against your strict upbringing?
Definitely. It was one of the first things that I did when I left being a Jehovah's Witness, because when I left, I remember waking up and just feeling so hollow, like physically empty. There was nothing except my flesh and blood. So that was all I had to try and get my life back together. And I wanted to take control of my life. So I remember the first time I modeled, it was pretty scary, but I look at it from a distance. So it's a really interesting, like, social learning thing. It's really interesting the way people respond to the human body.
What has it taught you about the female body?
It's taught me a lot of things about the body. You know, there's that saying of the human body is a beautiful thing. It is beautiful, but you know, sometimes there's bits falling off and things hanging out. And sometimes, you know, sometimes life modeling for me can be like trying not to fart. But sometimes there's times where I feel so strong, like, yeah, I held that pose for 20 minutes. Yeah, rah. There's other times where I'm like, oh my gosh, this really hurts. And I have to be confident enough to say, I can't do this. Can we try something else? So it's really interesting to learn the boundaries of the human body.
Annie, your exhibition at the Banks and Arts Centre for International Women's Day is called You Are With Me in Paradise. What is your paradise?
So in my paradise, I am God, but I have my own angels and demons. I'm the gatekeeper of my paradise, my garden. My spirituality is the self-determined beliefs and practices that I adhere to in my life's evolution. It's my emotional, my psychological inner world and how I use that to find purpose, peace, and connection with the outer world.
Artist Annie Bunpresseur, who left the Jehovah's Witnesses to embody a new spirituality of her own. If hearing Annie's story raises issues for you, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. An exhibition of Annie's work opens at the Bankstown Arts Centre in Western Sydney on March the 7th, just in time for International Women's Day. And with that, let me thank the great women here at ABC Religion and Ethics, especially Mariam Shahab, who produced Soul Search this week. Thanks too to Mark Don for sound engineering. I'm Meredith Lake, and this is Soul Search on RN. You can find us online or via your favourite podcast app. Next time, we're talking spirituality in the midst of disasters, floods, fires, accidents and droughts. We'll meet people providing spiritual care on the front lines. On Soul Search next time, and I hope you can join me then.